You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam Disho on WAMU 88.5. Welcome soon the flagship central branch of the D.C. Public Library System, the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library downtown, will close its doors for a much-needed renovation. The historic modernist building designed by Mies van der Rohe will be reimagined over the course of the 3 years it's expected to be closed. Here to give a hint at what's in store and how he envisions the transformation of the space being a reflection of the change ways patrons use public libraries is Richard Reyes-Gavilan. He is the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. Thank you for joining us. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again, Kojo. Thanks for having me.
I'll ask for comments and questions starting right now. If you have any, call us, 800-433-8850. Are you and your family regular patrons of D.C. public libraries? What keeps you going back? Are you someone who chooses not to use the D.C. library system for a specific reason? Tell us what it is, 800-433-8850. You have said that the MLK library was outdated the day it opened, and note it has been an unloved structure for a long time. How confident are you that at the end of this 3-year renovation that you're readying to embark upon, those problems will be solved not just for the moment, but for a long time to come?
Supremely confident. So when I mentioned that the library has been outdated, I should clarify that it's really outdated now for how libraries are being used by the public. You know, when the library first opened as a sort of transactional space where you would run into, get a book, and leave, it was great. But now libraries are used for people who are coming in for long periods of time to change their lives in some sort of way. And that building in its current state doesn't allow for that. So what we're doing is we are really opening up the building, adding this sense of delight, adding this sense of openness and airiness that is timeless. So I'm sure that 10 years from now or 20 years from now, people will still look at that building and it will have those qualities that people want from their civic structures. Again, dignity, happiness, the sense of wonder. That's all we've tried to achieve with this library, and I think that the designs as we currently have them suggest that we've accomplished it.
And in case you're saying to yourself, what the heck is he talking about? What does this look like? You can go to our website, kojoshow.org, to see a slideshow of the plans for the renovation of the MLK Library for anyone who wants a sense of what it will actually look like. That's at our website, kojoshow.org. You can also join the conversation there, ask a question or make a comment. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or shoot us a tweet at kojoshow. You've been doing what you've referred to as the roadshow, hosting community meetings around the changes underway at the library. What are you hearing at these meetings from constituents, and what about those conversations has surprised you?
Well, we have aggregated the number of community meetings and stakeholder meetings that we've had since this process began in 2014, and we're counting somewhere around 60. And those include some of the mandated public engagement sessions that occur through the National Capital Planning Commission and the Historic Preservation Review Board and the Commission of Fine Arts, before whom we're presenting on Thursday. And again, community meetings in libraries and churches and basements all over town. We've been talking to people. And, you know, we've heard remarkably consistent stories about people feeling that they want a building that they can be proud of, a building that is unique to D.C. as opposed to being a federal structure. And that's something that has surprised me coming into D.C. as an outsider from New York a few years ago. I didn't realize how palpable this this sort of tension between the federal and local city is. And everyone has been crying for a local monument that speaks to D.C. being a real city, divorced from it being a tourist attraction for people visiting the federal monuments. So, you know, people have wanted a space that they could feel safe in, a space that they could do research in, a space that they could bring their kids to, a space that they could that could make them feel happy, a space that could honor the legacy and life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a space that would be a that would focus on inclusion. inclusion and helping folks who need additional help to get a leg up. So, there was nothing that was really surprising in terms of everything that we've heard. And again, I think at this point, everyone will see something in this building, something that speaks to them and speaks to their input. Again, we're pretty happy with it.
With the number of community meetings that you have had and are having, if you were running for office, you'd be a shoo-in for office. If you'd like to know the schedule of those meetings, you can also find that at our website, kojoshow.org. And as I said, you can join the conversation there. Also, anytime you renovate a space, it means that you need to get out of it. Where will you be moving to for the 3 years of renovations, and what are the implications of that move for services that people have come to expect at MLK Library?
And that's actually a large focus of the community meetings that we are now having starting on November 9th at the MLK Library. People are very interested to know what will happen to the services that they rely upon, especially the unique services. So our special collections, our Washingtoniana division, for example, is something that is near and dear to many researchers.
Can you explain to our listeners exactly what that is?
Certainly. Thank you. So our Washingtoniana division is the library's local history collection of all things Washington, D.C., and it includes information about real estate and the photography morgue of the Washington
Star
newspaper.
Which is no longer
in
existence, right?
And many other unique and valuable items. So it is the library's priority to look at those items that can't be found anywhere else and figure out a way to make them accessible. The challenge for us, Kojo, is that the overall project budget for the renovation has to include all the moving costs and relocation costs and lease costs. So we have to be very efficient and innovative in how we deliver these services during the time that the library is closed. We are so fortunate to have so many partners in D.C. that are willing to work with us to help us figure out these issues. So on the one hand, we will be leasing a small amount of space downtown on 18th and K Street for the administrative offices and a small sort of library express is what we're calling it. But other strategies include working with our friends at the Historical Society of Washington, D.C., for example, at the Carnegie Library, and even at the Library of Congress and other locations to make sure that what we have is accessible during the 3 years. I don't want to confuse anyone and promise that everything will be accessible the way it currently is. I think that would be a tall order. But we have heard loud and clear about what is most meaningful to most people. We also will be putting together some sort of advisory panel, especially around the Washingtoniana Local History Collection, to help inform some of our decisions, both short-term and long-term, when the building reopens.
Yes, because the square footage you'll be having at your temporary location is nothing compared to what you currently have.
Precisely. I mean, our little temporary location is a very, very small express stop where you can come in, pick up a book, get on a computer. But it is not meant in any way, shape, or form to replace the services of a central library. It was one of the decisions we made early on when we renovate a neighborhood branch library, for example. We will typically try to offer as many of those services as humanly possible. In fact, right here, I'm looking across the street and I see a temporary library opening up for the Cleveland Park branch, which just closed a couple of weeks ago. But for something like the MLK Library, which is north of 400,000 square feet, if you were to try to approximate that by providing, 20,000 or 40,000 or 70,000 square feet, the entire modernization budget would be swallowed up in lease costs and related costs.
Our guest is Richard Reyes-Gavilan. He is the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. We're talking about the remodeling of the Martin Luther King Library and taking your calls at 800-433-8850. What role do you think libraries ideally should or could have in our communities? Tell us where you see that reflected or what more you think could be done. 800-433-8850. Here is Jack in College Park, Maryland. Jack, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thank you for having me, Kojo. Like you mentioned, I'm a resident of Prince George's County in Maryland. And, I think I've seen, what libraries have done for my life as a college student, just, you know, even if I'm not going there to rent a book or, you know, to use their services, but rather just get homework done. You know, I think the services and just the place that a library offers for, you know, people like college students or even high school students, I think it's so beneficial. I think that it can be daunting, the cost of renovating a library for, you know, a smaller community in D.C. or Maryland. But I really do think that the outcome that I've seen and, you know, the benefits I get from it, you know, really, I think, should be considered in accordance to the cost. So
it's my understanding that even though you're living in Prince George's County, if you live in Maryland or Virginia, Rich, can you get access to the D.C. Public Library?
Sure. So we have what we call reciprocal borrowing privileges with our neighbors in Maryland and Virginia, so that they can access both our physical material and, of course, the wealth of offerings that we have online at dclibrary.org.
Thank you very much for your call. You, too, can call us, 800-433-8850. You mentioned the Washingtoniana collection. There had been a petition circulated to keep access to it open. Do you have, as yet, firm plans in which you'll be able to do that?
Not firm plans, Kojo, beyond the library's firm commitment that we will make the collection as accessible as we possibly can. We understand, again, I think that this might be the greatest concern of our residents, or at least those residents who have contacted me directly or the library. And as I mentioned before, we've got the list of partners that we will be working with to make sure this material is accessible. What I can't tell you right now is sort of hours of service and specific type of material that will be accessible when. That will be worked out, again, right up through when we close the building, hopefully in March.
Speaking of partners, last week we hosted a community forum and the issue of D.C. statehood came up. It occurs to me that many residents may not know the full history of the district and its representation or lack thereof in the Congress of the United States, even if they went to local schools. When you were last here, we talked about new efforts underway for you to partner with D.C. public schools. Where do those efforts stand now, and would access to collections on D.C. history perhaps be included in that collaboration?
One of the ideas that we have for when the building reopens, particularly because we will be devoting much more space and time to our local history collection, we would love to be a destination location for all D.C. students who are looking to pass their D.C. history requirement. We would relish that. That idea, and I'll certainly talk to the new chancellor about that at the right time. More immediately, I probably mentioned an idea that we have launched slowly with DC Public Schools around helping the schools select their own materials for their own school libraries. And we have tentative plans right now to help also with the delivery of public library material to schools, and that at some point will include charter schools and possibly others as well.
One reality of the public library system here and in many other parts of the country is service to the homeless community. The main MLK branch has been a gathering place for that population, and I wonder if there's been a shift in the outreach you've been doing with that population in advance of the renovation.
Good question. So, you know, early on, when I started in 2014, we knew that there was going to be a major change occurring with the closure of that library. And one of the things that we did early on was hire a licensed social worker who is on the library staff and serves as the main point of contact for meetings at the city, for meetings with partners around town. And she is a wonderful staff member by the name of Jean Badalamenti. She's also done staff training around dealing with our homeless patrons, and has done programs specifically with our homeless patrons. One in particular called Coffee and Conversation is a program by which anyone from the public, but particularly our homeless patrons, will come in for a cup of coffee and engage in civic discourse, which I think is just such a noble thing to be doing in the library. Beyond that, we know that there are going to be changes in terms of of gathering spaces. I'm really heartened by the support that the library has gotten from the Deputy Mayor of Health and Human Services and the Director of Homeless Services, Laura Zeilinger. They are acutely aware of the library's schedule, and they are working feverishly on plans. They will be in attendance, by the way, at our meeting on November 9th at the MLK Library to talk a little bit about their thoughts on homeless services in the city, specifically around the MLK closure and possibly even more broadly.
800-433-8850. Here is Michael in Washington, D.C. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good. Kojo, I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you, Michael.
I love your show. When you started, I thought nobody could ever replace Derek McGinty.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Well, you have.
Thank you.
My comments. The Chevy Chase Library has been redone. The sense of openness is accomplished by shelving that is very low. And I, as an 81-year-old man, can't, it's very difficult to get down and crawl around the floor. I'm also 6'3" tall to see book titles. With the old shelving, which went up higher, it was much easier. And I surely want to complain. I'd rather have close-sindedness and be able to see the books than openness. That's one thing.
Well, allow me to have Rich respond one question at a time, because when I looked at the plans for the new library in the children's section, where obviously people are smaller and therefore the books are lower, I said, when I take my granddaughter there, I'll be doing a lot of crawling. But go ahead, please, Rich.
Sure, and thank you, sir, for calling in. You know, I'm absolutely sensitive to your concerns, and that's something that libraries still fail to really get right. You know, we often get complaints about how low shelving might be, but conversely, we get complaints about how high shelving can be, depending on the height of a patron or whether that patron might be in a wheelchair or something similar. And it's something that, you know, we do the best that we can. I will say that the Chevy Chase Library, we spruced it up last year, but it was not a full renovation. Chevy Chase is actually one of the few libraries in our system that has not been given the treatment yet that 16 others have. And but we are absolutely cognizant of that ongoing issue in libraries. And I apologize for it, and I'll go back to the team and see if there's anything that we can do. But I do understand the limitations of the space that is usable for us.
Michael, thank you very much for your call. I think, Michael, you had a second question?
Yeah. How long has it been since he's used the men's room at Martin Luther King Library?
Why?
I found it frightening to go in there. People hanging around, God knows what they were doing, but I was scared.
Well, let's talk about that, Rich.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you know, I'm glad that you brought that up, Michael, because you know, one of the things that we absolutely know is that safety is an issue for many folks who come to the MLK Library. Our staircases are dark; they're disorienting, and our restrooms, I think, people feel the same way. Now, one of the things that we try to do with the new design is to locate the bulk of our bathrooms very centrally in one space near the entrance. And that will, we hope and expect, will create a certain sense of openness in the restrooms as well. And I hope that issue of fear or something similar will no longer be. But I mean, it's a real issue. And just as a side note, I cannot tell you how much time we have spent with our architects talking about the number of restrooms, how they're oriented, what floors. I mean, it's a serious issue and one that we don't take lightly. So thanks for bringing it up.
And thank you for your call, Michael. We're talking with Richard Reyes-Gavilan. He is the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. Seems to me, as an outside observer, that the debates there may have been around whether there is a future of libraries have died down or at least quieted down. How do these new branches like Woodridge or plans for renovated branches like MLK and Cleveland Park reflect what you see as the role of libraries in our communities today and moving forward?
Sure. I'll borrow a term that that our mayor uses about the new MLK Library. She calls it a life change center. And, you know, when I look at a new library like Woodridge, and I absolutely recommend all your listeners visit this staggeringly beautiful new library in Ward 5, you will see that what this building is designed to accomplish is to get people really thinking about their futures and hope and interaction and civic engagement and having a place that they can really feel proud of. You know, what libraries, again, are supposed to do is create that sense of wonderment and create that sense of possibility. I mean, I think that is all we try to accomplish in its simplest form. And if we do that, we've created a structure that will be relevant, you know, for our lifetimes and beyond.
We're going to take a short break because this is, of course, during our fall membership campaign. But when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. He is Richard Reyes-Gavilan. So you can start calling now, 800-433-8850. If you live in a D.C. neighborhood where the library has recently been rebuilt or renovated, tell us how that space is working for you, 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or a tweet at Kojo Show. I'm Kojo Nandi.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black change makers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Hear are the stories of these incredible scientists, activists, artists, and more throughout February on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at WAMU.org.
Our guest is Richard Reyes-Gavilan. He is the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. And I know Stephen in Washington, D.C. has been holding for a while, so allow me to go directly to Stephen. Stephen, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd just like to say that I'm very happy to hear that the library is being renovated. I'm now 45, and that MLK Library was very invaluable. It is a very invaluable resource to me as a child in school, and it's now become a great resource for my son, who's now 5. We frequently attend the story times, the family fun days. We participate in the summer reading program, and it's just been a great resource for him. We also attend the Mount Pleasant Library is our favorite. We also go to Shaw, Petworth. We're just happy to hear that the MLK one is finally stepping up.
Well, there might be some pleasant surprises for your 5-year-old, because when the library is reopened, there'll be a lot of delightful surprises, including a slide in the children's room area. And Stephen, remember, the slide is not for you. It's for your son. And a large space for story time. Rich, tell us a little bit about your philosophy or approach to inviting kids and their families into this space and into others throughout the system.
Sure. So first of all, thank you, Stephen, for being such a good patron of the D.C. Public Library. You know, Mount Pleasant and Petworth and Shaw certainly are shining examples of the good work that we do. But, you know, the truth is, and, you know, I've got my own little focus groups in terms of my 10-year-old daughter and 4-year-old daughter. You know, I bring them to MLK. They only want to go to my office because it's nice, but they don't really want to spend too much time in some of the library because, again, it's just... it's not a fun space. And, you know, children's rooms should be fun. You know, you go to Mount Pleasant, you see those beautiful Aurelius Battaglia murals that really just are so full of joy and wonderment. It's a great space to be. So one of the the architectural issues we wanted to resolve, frankly, at MLK, is how do you make this a fun space for children? And the architects had an idea of introducing a slide in some unused space in a stairwell. And we just absolutely loved the idea. And, you know, in our meetings with our advisory panel and with other community groups, the slide was just something that really resonated with people. It's like, this is a destination that will make caregivers and parents want to come use the library, check out books, participate in summer reading, all the things that Stephen mentioned, but also take a trip down the slide that'll take you down to not quite the first floor, but almost the first floor.
Plan on taking the slide, Stephen?
Absolutely. I can't wait to put my son on. He is going to be amazed. And like you said, the current library in its current state is a little daunting. It's dark. The bathrooms, like your previous caller said, are a little scary. The stairwells, and it's been like that. And those are my memories of it as well as a child. So I'm glad to hear it's being brightened up, opened up, and, inviting for children.
Stephen, thank you very much for your call. Rich, do you think we have a strong culture of reading today as perhaps we used to in our society a generation ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm hesitate to call myself an expert. You know, we see people reading in libraries as much as we've ever seen them. Of course, in the format's changing, right? A friend of mine would always say it's the content, not the container. So last year, 2 years ago, we reached a circulation milestone with our e-collections, our electronic collections. We had a million circulations of our electronic collections. But our physical collections are still getting a tremendous amount of use. So the culture of reading is still there. Clearly, people are have many more options in terms of how they read. But one of the things that we always keep in mind, especially in the public library, is that, in many instances, people use us who don't have access to electronic books, who don't have high-speed internet access at home. And that's a population that we are here to serve. So it's something that we monitor, and you know, we collect pretty good data, but we don't see the library as a reading destination, supplier of literature and literacy. That we don't see that changing.
On now to an email we got from Richard, who says, the renovation of the Northeast Branch Library was beautifully restored. It also has an essential 4 electrical outlets at each table. The children's room upstairs was also wonderfully done. I guess Richard just wanted to say thank you very much. But it's my understanding, there's a space for makers in the new library when it comes up. The Fab Lab, which will give access to 3D printers and other tools. We got that from your website. The Fab Lab is a kind of do-it-yourself space that allows customers to learn, make, and collaborate. The laser cutter, 3D printers, soldering tools.
Sure. we're going to have a lending library of actual tools pretty soon, hammers and saws and things like that. One of the things that libraries have been specializing in somewhat over the past 5 or so years is around this concept of emerging technologies, training people across the entire spectrum of technology, not just how to use a computer and set up an email account, but now learning how to do things like solder or use a laser cutter. The truth is that urban areas are now great destinations for the creative community, people who are self-employed, people who are learning how to do more with their hands, learning how to do more on their own. And, you know, libraries want to provide free spaces for people who are learning to do things that you and I would never have dreamed of doing, Kojo, in a library. So, we've got a phenomenal number of spaces now for our emerging technologies and a studio space for rehearsing and playing drums and a new memory lab for people who want to transfer their obsolete formats onto new cloud-based storage. And it's happening in a way, going back to the problems with the building. It's hard to find in the new building. You get disoriented. The new library is going to have a beautifully designed space on the lower level for all these activities.
Here now is Carol in Washington, D.C. Carol, your turn.
There is, underneath the Central Library, a city-owned parking lot. Up until a few years ago, that was available for use by patrons. Unfortunately, that's no longer available, and the garage is now used for city employees. And the question I have is why? Because public transportation is not readily available to many neighborhoods in the city.
Why is the garage now restricted to use by district employees, says our caller?
I guess that's a good question, because we are rethinking our parking program and our garage program. As it stands, when the building reopens, we're going to have only one single ramp for egress and ingress, and that's going to present some challenges in terms of parking. I guess what I can commit to the caller is that we are absolutely interested in rethinking the parking program. I know it was public at some point. Now employees do pay to park there. At this point, I am not. I don't have any real strong sense one way or the other what the parking program will be when we reopen, but we will absolutely look at all of our options, including public parking.
Thank you very much for your call. We got an email from a Brookland resident who says the new Woodridge Library is beautiful, but so loud. Because of the open design, the sound of a kid talking in the first floor children's area carries all the way up to the second floor computer areas and the third floor reading seats. Maybe it will get quieter after the buzz wears off. But I'm curious how the architects envisioned the library. Were they looking for a vibrant gathering place instead of a quiet study space? Or, I would add, a combination of both.
Yeah, I think you can make that argument with Woodridge. It is a very, very open design all the way up through the third floor outdoor reading garden. I think the best advice we can give people is to make good use of the private study spaces if they need something that's very, very quiet. Beyond that, I do think that there's probably a level of excitement right now that may dissipate somewhat over time, but we are sensitive to that and strongly recommend, especially for those periods of time where you need real time to concentrate, think about the private study spaces, and when weather is permitting, the outdoor space on the third floor overlooking Langdon Park is another beautiful space that I think encourages sort of solitude and study. But that is a good and fair comment.
If you have questions or comments for Richard Reyes-Gavilan, the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System, give us a call at 800-433-8850. What role do you think libraries ideally should or could have in our communities? Tell us where you see that reflected or what more you think could be done. 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Speaking of buzz, there's a kind of cool and cachet around DCPL these days. People scoured the city last month looking for books the Library Foundation hit around town to raise awareness of the practice of banning books. And this month, everyone with a library card can get free lunch on Tuesdays from ShopHouse locations in D.C. That has led to a huge spike in library card applications. Are you at all surprised by that cool factor? Is this part of a kind of shift in attitude about the library that has been underway?
You know, I think libraries have always been cool in some ways, right? Sort of nerd chic or maybe something else. I will give a plug to the Libraries Foundation, which is just a phenomenal organization that is so incredibly creative with its banned book scavenger hunt and its great parties at the MLK Library. I think it is absolutely raising the profile of D.C. Public Library in a way that will benefit us long term. And certainly, look, it's great. Any initiative that can get more people signed up for cards is a phenomenal initiative, especially if you can eat a healthy salad along with your library card. And then it's upon the onus is on me and the library to create services in our buildings and online that will make you want to use that card. So having a card is one thing. Using it is something else. And that's our challenge. And that's why we create new services and build new buildings.
We got an email from Kate who says, does DCPL want used book donations? I've been told my branch is full, so is no longer accepting them. I've been told that before, too.
You know, many of our branches accept used books. Many of them don't. Frankly, we don't accession used books. They typically are very expensive to sort through and catalog. The way we purchase books now is much more streamlined. We get them at a deep, deep discount, and they come to our library shelf ready. None of that we can do with books that are donated by our neighbors. So we encourage people to visit those libraries that are accepting or find other organizations that are willing to take their books. I know it is a valuable community service, and some libraries take them, some don't.
You are no longer the newest library leader in town. Our 14th Librarian of Congress was sworn in just over a month ago. What does her appointment mean for you, both in terms of the profession and in terms of what kind of partner or ally she might be for our system moving ahead?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So Dr. Carla Hayden was, as you just mentioned, named the new Librarian of Congress. And I have to say, you know, within days of her appointment, there was already a renewed focus on partnering with the local public library. She and her wonderful staff have reached out to us after having read a newspaper article in the Washington Post about Washingtoniana and said, listen, Rich, what can we do here at LC to help? And so my staff and her staff are working that through. I think professionally, to have a public library director heading the nation's library of record speaks volumes to the ongoing significance and possibly renewed significance of public libraries in the United States. I think that, you know, Dr. Hayden is seen as an innovator and someone who can address many of the challenges that are being faced by LC and other libraries around the country. I, for one, am absolutely thrilled that she's here in town. She made it even to our Woodridge Library opening and spoke a little bit. And I see myself working with her as much as she'll have me work with her.
I'm working on getting her to move from Baltimore, but that's another story altogether. When is the renovation of the MLK Library expected to be completed?
We are looking at this point, based on the funding schedule, to reopen the library in the spring of 2020. There may be a way to accelerate that a little bit, but at this point, that is the timeline.
It's a big building. We'll look forward to that. Richard Reyes-Gavilan is the executive director of the D.C. Public Library System. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo. It is always an honor and pleasure.
That's it for the show today. But recently, producer Taylor Burney went to a different library, the Library of Congress. And while she was there, she got to see the items that were in President Lincoln's pockets on the night he was assassinated at Ford's Theater. You can see those items yourself by visiting kojoshow.org/blog for a peek at the personal items that Lincoln kept close to him, which included glasses held together with string and a Confederate $5 bill. That's kojoshow.org/blog. And be sure to meet us back here tomorrow at noon. We discuss what the coveted Michelin star snagged by several restaurants in our region mean for D.C.'s dining scene. That's coming up tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.